सम्राट कस्य नाभाहे तो हांडूनां मानवर्धना द्रायोपविष्टो गंगायां आनाद्रित्याधिरात् श्रियं। And possessed all the opulences of his acquired kingdom. He was so exalted that he was increasing the prestige of the Pandu dynasty. Why did he give up everything to sit down on the bank of the Ganges and fast until death? Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Maharaj Parikshit was the emperor of the world in all the seas and oceans, and he did not have to take the trouble to acquire such a kingdom by his own effort. He inherited it from his grandfathers, Maharaj Yudhisthira and brothers. Besides that, he was doing well in the administration and was worthy of the good names of his forefathers. Consequently, there was nothing undesirable in his opulence and administration. Then why should he give up all of these favorable circumstances and sit down on the bank of the Ganges, fasting till death? This is astonishing, and therefore all were eager to know the cause. Om Akyantimidandasya Gyananjana Chalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha. And possessed all the opulences of his acquired kingdom. He was so exalted that he was increasing the prestige of the Pandu dynasty. Why did he give up everything to sit down on the bank of the Ganges and fast until death? Generally, we find that even the most religious personalities who are in the grihastha ashram, who are keeping Krishna in center of all of their responsibilities, family, social, political, occupational, that they wait until the dusk of their life, when they are old and they are not able to maintain their particular pace and efficiency, then they take to a life of renunciation. In fact, this is the standard procedure according to the Varnashram system. For the first 25 years, it is recommended that one is a brahmachari, one lives very simple, as a student, studying the shastra, learning how to discipline himself properly. And then if that inclination is strong within one's mind, one takes to the Grihastha ashram, raises a family, marries a virtuous and chaste woman to share Krishna consciousness life with, produces children, raises them in Krishna consciousness, and responsibly takes care of the economic condition of the family as well, oftentimes inheriting some sort of occupation from one's forefathers, and developing, building, dedicating as far as possible the fruits of their labor for the benefit of the world by assisting in the spreading of Krishna consciousness. And after the children are grown and the Grihastha is no longer really at his peak of efficiency, at that time, in a very gracious and respectable way, he retires, turns whatever responsibilities there are over to the elder children, and then he takes to Vanaprast along with wife. They both simply utilize all of their time for the purpose of cultivating higher consciousness by serving and associating with sadhus, by studying Srimad Bhagavatam and other bhakti scriptures, by increasing the chanting of the holy names, by engaging in more preaching activities, by visiting holy places of pilgrimage. And at the end of one's life, perhaps the last years, it is recommended for certain orders of society to accept sannyas, where one lives a life of complete simplicity and renunciation, especially in the Gaudiya Vaishnav movement, as Srila Bhakti Siddhanta and Srila Prabhupada has presented to us. During that time, we should preach Krishna consciousness by our example and by our words. And then, at the very end of one's life, one should simply be immersed in bhajan and go back home, back to Godhead, if that is where Krishna so desires that we serve. So this is the standard tradition of the true Vedic society. In fact, Srila Prabhupada would sometimes say that the word Hinduism was a word that was manufactured by the Muslims in Afghanistan when they were referring to the people who were living near the Sindhu River. They called them the Sindhus, later became Hindus. But he explained, but the real name for the religion of the Vedas is Varnashram Dharma. It is the process by which everyone becomes highly elevated in genuine spiritual life. And of course, the essence of Varnashram Dharma is Bhagavad Dharma. To learn that our eternal occupation in Varnashram is to be the servant of the Lord Sri Krishna. Atha pum bir vijasrestas varnashrama vibhagasha svanushtatasya dharmasya samsadir haritoshana. Within the Varnashram system, at every phase of our life, whether we are brahmacharis, grihasthas, vanaprastas, or sannyasis, or as far as the social orders, Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, or Shudras, our duties should be performed to please Krishna, to serve Krishna. under the direction of a proper spiritual master. Tasmad gurum prapadyeta jigyasu sraya utamam. So why is it the sages of Naimasharanya are inquiring from Srila Sutta? Why is it sages of Naimasharanya are inquiring that Emperor Parikshit, he was at the prime of his life. He was young, he was strong, he had just recently inherited the whole kingdom from his father. There were no troubles. Sometimes people renounce the world because of frustration, because they just don't want to deal with the anxieties of material life anymore. Like we have heard the story of the Avanti Brahman. He was very successful in his material life, and he had no inclination toward renunciation. But when everything was taken away, and he was utterly frustrated, his mind was disturbed, he was pretty much in a materially hopeless condition, then he took to a life of complete renunciation and accepted Tridanda Sannyas and became a perfected soul. But Maharaj Parikshit had no anxieties, no disturbances, no frustrations. He was the perfect king. All of the good citizens loved him. He didn't have any opposing party trying to take the kingdom away from him. The Pandavas had Duryodhana, Dhritarashtra. There was so much conflict. The politicians today in the West, there's the Democrats and the Republicans always fighting over who will rule, always blaspheming each other, trying to degrade the public image of the other party. Here we have the BJP and the Janata Dal and the Congress One and all these different parties, growing more parties every day practically. Shiv Sena. And they're always criticizing each other and blaspheming each other and trying to push one another out of office to take the seat. And it's frustrating. But Maharaj Parikshit, there was no opposing parties. Everyone agreed that he was best. Can you imagine a country where everyone agrees that the king is best? And all the politicians are his faithful, loyal, humble servants. They love him. They actually love him. All the good citizens of the world loved Maharaj Parikshit as much as they would love their own father, because he was so kind and gentle and so much a beneficiary of everyone who was good. But for those who were thieves and rogues, they feared him worse than Yamaraj, the lord of death. And mostly because of that fear alone, they gave up all their sinful ways and became his faithful, loving servants. There was practically no crime because everyone was so satisfied with his rule. There was no intoxication because he was teaching everyone to be intoxicated by practicing the principles of God consciousness, chanting the holy names. He was also a husband, and he was a father. And sometimes, even people who are very successful in all other aspects of their life, their son is a rascal, or their wife is insubmissive, and it just ruins everything. Even if you're the greatest politician with all powers, or the most successful businessman, if you come home and your wife is insubmissive, or your son is a rascal, your life is miserable. Doesn't matter what else happens. But Maharaj Parikshit, his wife, was very submissive, very chaste, willing to assist him and stand behind him in every aspect of his life, always kind, generous. Whenever he would come home, according to the Shastra, she would present herself in such a way that it was so pleasing that whatever anxieties may have been there in his work, he would just forget it. It was like Vaikuntha coming home. This is a Vedic wife's duty, and this is Maharaj Parikshit had such a lady. And his son was also faithfully very learned, very responsible, very pure in heart, and he was also a great devotee. In fact, his whole family was completely Krishna conscious. So why such a person of such a status in his youth, in his prime, did he renounce everything to sit on the bank of the river Ganges to fast until death? Of course, the sages of Naimisharanya, they are asking this question not only for their own purification, but for the welfare of all living beings. Knowing that the answers to these inquiries were the greatest welfare for all humanity. Munaya sadhu prishtoham bhavadbir lokamangalam yat kripa krishna samprashno yenatma suprasidati. That the questions you are asking are glorious, Suta Goswami said, because the answer to these questions is the subject of Krishna and Krishna consciousness. Therefore, it is meant for the ultimate welfare of all living beings. Maharaj Parikshit was cursed to die in 7 days. For a mistake that was very minor, and even the mistake that he made was not by his own inadequacy, but it was Krishna within his heart that forced him to make this mistake. He did not misuse his independence. When we make mistakes, it's because we have some ulterior motive and we misuse our good independence. And later we regret it. What did I do? Why? Was it worth it? This is the nature of the mind. Maya tempts us with some apparent opportunity to enjoy or prosper in a way that is not according to Krishna consciousness. And because we are weak, because we still have that propensity to be the enjoyer, to be the controller, we agree with Maya and we do the wrong thing. And then when we come to our senses, we regret it. We want to just kick ourselves in the head in feelings of regret. How can I atone? What did I do? Why am I spoiling everything? Krishna and Guru have given me so much. Why am I contaminating my life in this way? This is the condition of many neophyte devotees. Sometimes a brahmachari eats too much and he regrets, why did I do? Or due to anger, we criticize or blaspheme another Vaishnava. And then we regret, why did I do it? What came over me? Everything was so nice. Now, how to get out of this mess? All relations are disturbed. Krishna is displeased. Sometimes we even, due to social pressures, we deviate from the regulative principles. We eat something or we drink something that we know we shouldn't have. And then we regret it. Why did I do that? What came over me? Why didn't I think twice, three times, four times, five times, 100 times before doing? But Maharaj Parikshit, he was a perfectly self-controlled soul. He had already conquered the 6 pushings, the vegans. He had already purified his life through devotional service. And he had proven it on innumerable occasions. Then why, when he was in the forest, overcome with thirst, did he give in to disrespecting a Brahmin sage? His whole life was in serving and adoring the Brahmins and the Vaishnavas. We see that he had the capacity to fast from any food and water for 7 days without any inconvenience. That was what type of a caliber he was in. He didn't think twice about fasting till death. And the whole time he was hearing Srimad Bhagavat philosophy from Srila Shukadeva Goswami, nowhere did he indicate the slightest desire for food or water. Of course, he was drinking the most nourishing nectar of Krishna Katha. But still, if you were to have to sit and listen to Srimad Bhagavat for 7 days, even though the most elixir nectar of all tastes is coming into your ears, still, you would want some break to take prasad. Because we are not of that caliber of Maharaj Parikshit. Or drink some water, at least. But he had this power of self-control. Then why, when he was in the forest, it was not long, at the most a few hours, that he didn't have water. And he became uncontrollably thirsty. And when he went to the ashram of Samik Muni, the Muni was in Samadhi. And Maharaj Parikshit was an authority of the Vedas. He could analyze and understand perfectly well when a person was pretending and when a person was genuinely absorbed in meditation on the lotus feet of Krishna. Because it takes one to know one, and he was one. Samik Rishi was sitting in meditation on Krishna. Why Parikshit couldn't recognize that? Why he was so overcome with thirst? And why he insulted the Brahmin with harsh words and then garlanded him with a dead serpent? It was completely out of the character of Maharaj Parikshit to do any of those things. Because he was a surrendered soul to Krishna, Krishna was just like a puppet directing him to do all of these things. When you surrender to Maya, Maya controls you like her little puppet. She has the strings of the modes of material nature, and she wants you to have sex. She just pulls a string and you go, She wants you to eat, and you go eat. She wants you to take intoxications. She wants you to work like an ass to make money. She just pulls the string, and you start working like an ass to make money. She wants you to insult people because your prestige is being challenged. So she just pulls the string, and your mouth starts insulting people. Every limb of your body, all of your 10 indriyas are just your mouth, your power to speak, your power to see, your power to hear, your power to walk, to talk, to move, to think. All of those abilities, indriyams, they are all connected to Maya's strings. And she's just moving the strings and making you say and making you do and making you think in so many crazy ways, according to her control. Prakrite kriyamana ni gunai karamani saravasha. Ahankara vimutatma karata hamiti manyate. And the bewildered soul thinks that he's doing his activities. Actually, they are simply being controlled and orchestrated by Maya, material energy, because of ahankar, because of our false ego. We are surrendering to Maya. False ego means surrender to Maya. Humility means to surrender to Krishna. But when you surrender to Krishna, you become a puppet in Krishna's hands. Our independence is whose puppet we want to be. But our constitutional position is a puppet. Do we want to be Krishna's puppet? Or do we want to be Maya's puppet? Do we want to surrender to Krishna through the acharyas and through Guru and simply do as they like? Or do we want to surrender to Maya through modern education, through all of the social conventions, and just act according to their dictations? But when we surrender to Krishna, we are willing to do whatever Krishna likes to assist in his mission. Our Guru Maharaj, when he was requested by his spiritual master to preach in the Western world, it was a very difficult thing. At such an old age, with such little assistance, to go to such a strange land as America. But when he was just approaching Boston Harbor and he saw the skyline, he came to a realization, oh my Lord Krishna, what is this? Where have you taken me? What am I to do? Sometimes Indian people, they come to America, and when they see New York City or Boston Harbor, and they see the people and the pace of life and the type of sinful activities, they're enlivened because they go there. They're going there to enjoy. They're going to find some new taste of material pleasure. And it's so different in a place like India. When foreigners come to India, if they come for sense gratification, they become sick to their stomachs. Where have I come? What am I doing in this place? It's filthy, it's dirty, it's so backward, it's unproductive, inefficient, people everywhere. The way they drive, the way they dress, there's no sense gratification for a foreigner here in India. But when Indians go to the West, I have seen, they become enamored, intoxicated, and totally bewildered by all of the facilities for enjoyment and all of the incredible types of technology. When Prabhupada was coming to the West to try to teach the Americans how to renounce material life, and chant the holy names of Krishna. Came to a civilization where the entire economy is based upon breaking the four regulative principles. The entire economy. In one lecture, Srila Prabhupada said, and when this country becomes Krishna conscious, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meeting, so many no's, the demons will die. Even England, which is somewhat more cultured and pious, and Lord Jetland was actually a very pious person, and this was many decades back, when it was not so degraded. When he heard from one of Guru Maharaj's godbrothers about these four regulative principles, can you make me a Brahmin? Yes. You just follow this no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating. And Lord Jetland said, impossible. How will I live? How will I survive? What will I do? It is a fact. We talk about celibacy to an American, and they say, what, are you crazy? Celibacy? Giving up intoxications? You become a social outcast. Stopping eating meat? People will think that within days you will die of starvation. They have no conception of any other diet. No gambling. Gambling is one of the greatest addictions. Everywhere you go, there's casinos and lotteries and betting on sporting events. Most people, they can't even sit through a sporting event unless they bet on it, because it's just not interesting. So in this way, so sinful. Prabhupada was coming and he saw the skyline and he could feel the vibration of the place. I'm supposed to convince all this nation to follow the four regulative principles, to renounce all their attachment to all of their material facilities, and to surrender to Krishna. And they've never even heard of Krishna. So therefore, Prabhupada prayed, Krishna, Gurudev, you sent me here. I didn't come on my own. I'm coming on your order. I'm a puppet in your hands. Make me dance as you like me to dance. I hardly speak proper English. What to speak of the youth? In the 1960s, not a person in this room could have understood a sentence of the youth of America, because their English was a completely newly manufactured form of English. It's called slang. You've heard the word slang. I won't speak any for you because you're devotees. But anyways, they had their own language. They had terminologies which even the adults, their own parents, couldn't understand what they were talking about. It was like code language that only they could understand. Their own generation, it was a language within a generation. And yet, Prabhupada was coming, and he was thinking, I don't even properly speak their language. how will I convince them of the deep, profound philosophy of Jiva Goswami and Rupa Goswami? But Krishna, if you give me the words to speak, then they will listen and they will understand and they will be convinced. I am your puppet, Krishna. Please give me the words to speak. Not only that, but he was so old and he just had heart attacks and seasickness and rheumatism and all things. How is he going to move about? What to speak of teaching them how to dance, as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught dancing by his own example. Krishna, I am your puppet. So we find that the great devotees, to serve the mission of the Lord controls their life and works through them to reveal his divine grace. So Maharaj Parikshit, in a very inconceivable way, he was being utilized by the Lord to set the stage for the Srimad Bhagavatam to be spoken. He became uncontrollably thirsty, and he became disrespectful to the very object of his worship, the Brahmins. And he was cursed to die in 7 days. And when he understood what had taken place, he understood that this was the will of Krishna. And he didn't have even the slightest second thought to renounce everything. He took his young son and coronated him as king. He arranged that this would all be done. He himself did everything very quickly. He just arranged that this be done. His faithful, chaste wife, all of his ministers who worshipped him and loved him. You know, this is very rare. These days, nobody's very loyal to each other unless you pay them sufficient money. Then they become loyal. But that's not loyalty. Loyalty means even if you give them nothing, they'll do anything for you. Even if you lose everything, they'll be willing to lose everything along with you. That's loyalty. When Ram lost, Ram was supposed to be king of Ayodhya. And Sita was going to be the queen. When she married Ram, that was the understanding that she would be the queen. She was marrying the eldest son of Dasarath, the Yuvaraj. But when Ram lost everything, Sita showed her loyalty. If you lose everything, I also lose everything, but I'm with you. That is loyalty. That is a loyal friend. That is a real servant. So, Maharaj Parikshit, he had a whole kingdom of such loyal followers, but he left them all by the arrangement of Lord Krishna. And he went to the bank of the Ganges, not only for his own salvation, but as an example for all the world to see. Yad yaracharati sreshthas tad tad evitaro jana sayat pramanam kurute lokas taranuparatate. What the great men do, the common men follow. And if you take the position of a leader, it's your responsibility. You have to set this highest standard. If you are a mother or you are a father, you are a leader. You have children who are going to follow you. It is your duty. You must be willing to sacrifice everything and anything to establish a high standard for them to follow. If you are an employer, you're a leader. It's your duty to set a very high spiritual standard for others to follow. If you are a teacher, people look up to you. What to speak? If you are a sadhu, a Brahmin, or a king. So Maharaj Parikshit, he understood that his duty was to guide everyone in Krishna consciousness. And this was his greatest opportunity to serve all of humanity by showing this example. That ultimately there's no other purpose to life than realizing Krishna. And we should be willing to give up everything if that's what is required. We should not be attached to anything that interferes with our service to Krishna. As Rupa Goswami explained, real detachment means to accept what is favorable for devotional service and to reject whatever is unfavorable. Maharaj Parikshit was an acharya. He was teaching by his example. That for Krishna consciousness, there's nothing that we are willing to put between us and Krishna. And he wanted to show the world to such an extreme that he left it all. Most people, when they hear that death is coming, they want to arrange a nice, comfortable situation. It's like, what do most grihasthas do now? They work their life so that they can retire in luxury and die comfortably. Haribo. They work like asses. They can't even enjoy what they're working for because they have so many anxieties and so many pressures. So why you're doing it? So that when I'm old, I will have security and comfort. And I can have a nice bed and nice servants and everybody around me so that I can die in peace and luxury without any needs, with all sorts of nice arrangements around me. Oh. If you examine society, people work for that. They work for their retirement. Or today, when one of our devotees becomes a brahmachari, to dedicate his whole life to the highest service to humanity, to cure the suffering of people's hearts and souls. But their parents, they say, well, but we're about to retire. And when we retire, you must protect us and maintain us and provide luxuries for us. According to the Vedic system, when you retire, you're supposed to abandon all desires for luxuries and maintenance and all these other things. That's what retirement means. Vanaprastha, according to the Shastras, when you're a vanaprastha, you're only supposed to wear barks of trees. And you're only supposed to sleep on the hard ground. You're supposed to only eat the herbs and the roots that grow. You're not even supposed to eat cooked food. That was the traditional standard of when you retire. But now we want our children to work so hard to provide soft beds and nice homes and succulent foods and servants and everything else so that we can very nicely and comfortably spoil our entire human existence. What to speak of when we die, we have to have our status quo, that our fellow cast members will be proud of us and say nice things about us at our funeral. This is material condition of life. But Maharaj Parikshit wanted to set this standard, that at the dusk of one's life, we should be willing to do whatever is required to detach ourselves from everything except Krishna, to make Krishna's mission our life and soul. And what is the greatest virtue? To hear and chant the glories of the Lord and the association of his devotees. That is the greatest opulence. That is what human life is ultimately all about, to hear and chant the glories of the Lord in the presence of his devotees. And at the end of our life, we should exclusively be doing only that.